Have this down. There we go. All right, good deal. So I'm going to read my regular spiel here and then we'll get going to the fun stuff. All right. Hello, inventors and entrepreneurs. My name is Andrew Krauss. I'm one of the co-founders here at Inventor Groups of America. Type your name into the chat if you're new and say I'm new. Wave your hands, whatever you want to do there. Also, for everyone, we'd like to hear your name and what state or country you're from. That's always cool. We always get people from a lot of different countries. So go over to the chat right now and open it up at the bottom of your screen. They kind of changed a little bit. There's on my screen, there's not a button, but you have to hit the three dots to get to the chat. So that might be helpful for you guys. And type in what country, what state you're from, and maybe your first name or something. That would be great. So IGA was founded by Stephen and myself to teach individuals how to best commercialize their product ideas, as well as strengthen and support inventor groups around the nation. As many of you know, Stephen and myself also run InventRight, where we coach inventors to license their products. Everything here at IGA is free. Yes, free. Isn't that cool? IGA also has a directory of local and regional inventor groups on our website. If you're located near one, we highly encourage you to join. Please do not disclose anything that is confidential and is not already publicly available. This meeting is being recorded and will be harnessed on our website and our YouTube channel soon. If you have any questions for us, please type them in the chat as they come to you. We'll be doing Q&A some at the end and maybe some during as well. So if something comes to you with the topic that we're talking about, type in a question. We're probably going to be able to get to all of them because we're going to extend the meeting a little bit at the end too. So our other co-founder, Mr. Stephen Key, right over here, I'm not sure where he is, or he's over here, is going to introduce our speaker tonight. Stephen, take it away.
Well, thank you very much, Andrew, and welcome everyone. You know, what's really great about IGA, we can pretty much do whatever we want here, and we can bring on some amazing inventors, and they can share their journey of how they commercialized their inventions. And we're very happy tonight that we have a very successful inventor that has gone through, I think, all the ups and downs. His product is selling everywhere. He's going to tell his story of how he did it and maybe some of the obstacles along the way. He's a great pitchman. He gets it. He's done all of it, basically. That's why we're really happy to have Michael Van Hoist today. Michael, thank you very much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. It's great to be here. Always great to see you guys.
Okay, Mike, let's start at the very beginning because maybe a lot of people don't know your product. I mean, I know it, I have it. In fact, I've got it on my shelf. I'm going to get it here in just a minute. You started a couple of years back. You had this idea. Please start from the very beginning so we can understand how you created it and a little bit about your product and what it does.
Sure. Yeah, I actually started back in 2017 when I finally came up with the original idea. I came up with it being a realtor for about 20 some odd years, 25 years. That was kind of my aha moment. And so what was happening during that time, I was constantly being invited back to my my clients' houses after I sold it to them. And lo and behold, what did I see, right? Every time I went back, where was their pictures and their craft items and everything else? They're always on the floor. We always do this. We move into a new place. They're stacked up against the living room hallways, walls. And I always asked them, I said, you know, why don't you put your stuff on the walls? You know, especially pictures and things. That's what brings the family together. You know, let's get these things up. It's kind of a happy moment. And they give me that crazy look like, Mike, don't talk to me about it. You know, I just moved in. We've had plenty of arguments. You know, I can't find my tools. I do not like putting things on the wall, you know? And so I stood back and I thought, well, okay, that's kind of my aha moment, right? I mean, I saw these people struggling with this. So many clients struggle with this, even myself over the past years, my wife, everybody else. And, you know, when you go to the store, you know, you can find all these really cool looking marking tools, you know, it'll kind of mark the hole. Maybe one might have a level in the middle and stuff like that. But ultimately, what you have to do is when you spend literally minutes to hours getting everything great and you feel good, and then guess what? You got to grab a hammer, you got to grab a nail, and you got to go up and put it on the wall. And we always do this, you know, hammer, nail, hammer, nail. And I thought, and that's how everything that you put on the wall comes out uneven because of that. Okay. You could buy a $1,500 laser level, be all excited, but guess what? You're still going back manually. We've never got out of our mind this sort of analogy about cavemen, hammer, nail, hammer, nail. And I thought to myself, why hasn't anybody put the nail on the wall for you? Why is that so difficult? Why hasn't anybody done that for you? So that was my aha moment. That's what I started thinking about was, was a how to put the nail on the wall for you. So I literally just, you know, was home in my garage one afternoon and I started coming up with something. People have seen this a little bit before, but this is my original prototype, guys, that I came up with. It's literally a piece of wood, a knob off a kitchen cabinet, and I drilled a bunch of holes in it to figure out how I can go to the wall and simply just put a nail in there just by pushing it. And that's all you have to do. Forget grabbing the hammer, forget grabbing all these things. So that's how I came up with it. The original product was called Level Art. That's the name I came up with originally. That's the name that I think Steven saw me the first time I ever went to a trade show and other people. I had a banner that said Level Art. And it made sense to me because we're leveling your art, right? That was pretty short-lived, you know, along the way. You know, when I got started, you know, after my first eye-opening trade show and things like this, I had started hunting around, starting getting my first meeting with different people. But then we changed the name very quickly right off the bat at the beginning and changed it to Push and Hang. That outlasted me a couple of years going along, and then it changed again. But we'll get into that a little bit later. But that's how I originally started bringing the product to life, you know, and wondering, OK, is it it's kind of a cool idea, you know, but would anybody buy it? Is it a viable product? You know, and I went through all the original sort of steps without even knowing what I was doing. I sort of ran into the EventRight crew basically maybe 40% into what I was doing. You know, I'm a very A to Z minded kind of guy, you know, and I want everything perfect and I want everything just to be just right. And it's sort of in my makeup. So I made sure my prototypes were perfect. I mean, they don't have to be, but that's just how I made. And that's how I started with that simple idea of, you know, trying to hang something on the wall without grabbing anything, without grabbing a hammer, nail, asking for help, you know, getting friends over. You just do it yourself. And you literally can use my product in a matter of seconds. So that's how I originally came up with it.
Oh, Mike, I've got a question for you here. Are you an engineer? How'd you engineer that? How'd you know to make it that way?
You know, Again, I think it's part of my makeup. You know, I tell this story all the time. You know, when I was young, I used to do all these. I used to take things apart constantly when I was young, put them back together, take them apart, put them back together. I think I learned a lot of this through my father. My father was an engineer. My father was an inventor himself in his own right. He worked for three generations at Firestone Tire and Rubber Company, and he invented a wonderful product for Firestone that he came up with. And I think I some of those genes maybe flew over to me, you know, and I picked up on a lot of that. But I just, everything's up here, you know. I'm one of those guys that can see it. Most people, when they do things, they have to literally touch it and feel it. And I can see it. I can automatically just see it in my mind. And I mean, all self-taught, you know, in that respect, you know, as far as coming up with things.
How about names? How'd you come up with the names? And you've got Level Art, Push and Hang, and Hang Hero.
Yeah.
How'd you come up with the three names? Tell us about that.
Well, the original idea when it was green, this is Push and Hang, but the original idea was still the same thing. It was called Level Art. It had a strut bar that went across the top of it. And I thought it was going to be for more stability. And down the road, I realized that was just an extra piece of metal I didn't need. But Level Art I came up with because when I started putting all these tools together, right, you know, hang easy, hanging fast, you know, all these things go through your mind when you're coming up with a name on a piece of paper and you got these 50 names. And then I started thinking about what exactly am I doing here that people have trouble with, and they're trying to level their artwork. And so that's how I came up with Level Art. And that was the original name. It was pretty catchy. A lot of people still today say, you know, Mike, I like that original name. Why didn't you keep that? You know, so but Level Art was short lived. Like I said, it lasted a trade show or so, and then changed it up. Once I started getting into different licensees and things like that, the name changed rather quickly, you know. And the second name, Push and Hang, came about when I landed my first licensee agreement with a company. We started talking about, different ways maybe to rename it, maybe not. So we sort of kept it up in the air, you know. We had one of our very first meetings way back, maybe 4 years ago with Walmart. I'm in Walmart today, but that back then we had our first meeting with them when it was Level Art. And they thought about their clientele. Okay, so the clientele at Walmart is different than, say, the clientele at Lowell's or Target or whatever, right? Everybody has their own demographic, whatever. And they thought, you know what? We need to come up with a name that's going to be easier for our customers to understand, you know? And so we knocked out a bunch of names. And then we decided, we came up with Push and Hang. We figured it can't get much easier than that, right? I mean, you're going to go up to the wall. What are you going to do? You're going to push and you're going to hang your picture. So just that easy. That's how we decided to go with Push and Hang, because it was a big generator through Walmart, which didn't take it at the time. But it did evolve into Push and Hang with that first licensee guy I had. And we called it that for a while, you know.
I got a question for you, Mike.
Yeah.
A lot of products, when you're just walking down the aisle in a store, if you don't understand it by looking at it, can be a problem. Now, you're a great pitchman. I've seen you at many trade shows, the houseware show, the hardware show, pitching the product. If it's a DRTV product, you know, infomercial product, you have the benefit of that. You've been on QVC as well. But did you have problems at the beginning where people would see the package and if they hadn't seen the product before, that they're like, I don't know how this thing works? And how did you, if so, how did you overcome that? Or have you never had that issue?
Well, no, I mean, I had that issue from the very beginning, guys. I mean, I started out once I had my original prototype, I started at home. I built a phony living room wall with a handle on it. It looked like a giant guitar case. And I would carry that around the neighborhood and knock on people's doors. I mean, I just knocked on people's doors. I said, hey, you know, you got a problem? You have a problem hanging pictures? It's frustrating. And do you have any issues with it? And they just open up like, my God, you know. So I started that way, as probably talking about some of my first demoing. You know, I would set up this living room wall against their wall so I didn't mess up their wall. And I would give them a demo of how the product worked. And their eyes got real big and they were real excited. And they're, oh my gosh, that's amazing. You know, so that was one of my first efforts of demoing that way. But yeah, after, I've said, and we all say this all the time, and everybody in their own little groups say this, you know, you could, my product, yeah, is in 8,000 stores, but your product could be in every store worldwide. If nobody knows what it is, they're going to simply walk right by it. And that's always been what sort of held my product back, even today. Even though it's out there mass merchandised everywhere now, it's still struggling a bit with what is it exactly. You know, is it some people, even store managers and things will go, is it what is it? Is it a new kind of ruler, or I don't know, you know? And so I have to educate them as I'm in the store with their staff and their sales meetings and things like that, and do a very simple demo for them. But we've tried all kinds of things, you know. I've done so much demoing over the last years and so many pitch competitions, and, you know, I've had it down to where it was, I guess you could call it my own personal little science. But you know, I would literally go into the stores and demo on the weekends, set a table out front. They would let me demo even stores that I didn't even have a product in yet. I would, you know, for whatever crazy reason, they go, sure, set up a table, demo out front. So I would start with that. I would ask the public when they came by, I'd let them do their own little demo and things like that, and sort of got around that. But we've still to this day have struggled with that part of demoing, you know, because people don't really know what it is. You know, we're starting to get more and more word of mouth because it's been generated year after year now, and all those years on things like that.
I'm going to dive deeper into that topic. Mike, yeah. Your computer is shaking a little bit.
Oh.
Your way to cut it. Before we get too far off, I still want to hit the names for just a minute.
Yeah.
Did you trademark those names?
I trademarked only one of them, the very first one, Level Art, I trademarked.
Are the other two trademarked?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Push and Hang and Hang Hero is trademarked, yes.
And the companies that you licensed it to, they own those trademarks?
They own those trademarks, yeah. They don't own any of the IP or anything like that, or any changes to the product, but they do own their own name. As we get into this and talk a little bit about when we get into, you know, DRTV, As Seen on TV, those companies typically like to own all of their own names.
Correct.
For each of the products. So that's why sort of how that came about. I've always had full permission to use those names any way that I can, even on my own personal websites that I create for these products. And I've had no issue with them at all doing that, you know.
Okay, so Mike, you've got this great product, Push and Hang. Andrew and I have seen you demo it. You're very good at doing the demo. The thing that I want to say about the demo, you guys, there's a wow factor here. And that's why I think the demos, when you demo it, you sell out everywhere you go. You sell out on QVC, you sell out at Home Depot, because there is a wow factor. The way you put those nails in so fast, so easy, it's so easy to do. So I'll get to that in a minute, because I think the education piece of creating demand is really important for every product. I think you have to create demand. You licensed to Hangman. And Andrew and I have met that company, great guys. You were with them for how many years?
Hangman, I was with them almost 2.5 years. Yeah. You know, I seek them out just like we're all sort of doing. You know, I got online and Googled this and that, and I narrowed it down to the two largest hanging type companies that have accessories. Hangman was one and Hillman was the other. And we see those everywhere in all different hardware stores. So I contacted both of them guys myself, sent them a little video and a little sell sheet, and then got responses rather quickly and sat down with both of them and ended up with Hangman at that time.
Did you get to them just by picking up the phone? Did you email? Do LinkedIn? How'd you get to them?
Yeah, I did it. Not through LinkedIn. I actually did it by walking into retail stores, picking a product on the shelf, you know, turning it upside down and figuring out who was the manufacturer, who was, who had these products. And I actually called them off of those names off the packages and got
them. Who did you ask for?
Pardon?
Who did you ask for when you called them up? You need to see it. What'd you say?
Well, you know, I gave the initial, do you guys accept open innovation? You know, I'm a developer here. I have a product I think that's going to fit very well in your family of products. And, I love to show you or talk to you about it, and they sent me back to, I actually got a hold of Jim right off the bat at Hangman. And he said, well, it sounds really interesting, Mike. I'd love to have you come down to Simi Valley. Let's sit and talk about it. And so that's how that came about, just by talking to Jim. He's just a fantastic, what I call good old boy, kind of old school. Jim's, I guess you could say he's probably kind of elderly. He's probably in his late 70s or something. But Jim is one of those guys that have, brought his business from bottom up. And he's a very handshakeable guy. He doesn't really like licensing agreements. He doesn't like long-term things. He just wants to go off of getting to know you, and trusting you, And so I sat down with him. But fantastic guy. Open to see what I had. It was very interesting. My very first meeting with Hangman Products, because his partner Steve was there, and in fact, I saw Steve at the National Hardware Show pushing one of their other products himself. But it was good cop, bad cop, guys. It was really interesting. It was a really, really kind of a crazy, crazy pitch moment. And I had one guy, it was like the little guy on your shoulder, what do you want that for? That guy's junk. Hey, I think it's gonna be wonderful. We should take it. Just let him go. It was this back and forth thing for like a half hour, and I sort of walked out of there going, yeah, I don't know. Did they like it or they don't like it? Or anyway, as soon as I left and got back home, I got a phone call instantly from Jim, and he says, hey, we wanna take on your product and we wanna talk to you about a contract. So that was wonderful, and the best thing about Hangman Products is they allowed me to go, and most companies kind of want you not to be involved or whatever, but they allowed me to go to every show and pitch and demo. And they said, who better to run this product than you? He says, oh my gosh, we can't do it. We couldn't demo like you because we just don't have the ability to do it the way you do it. And so I would be at all the shows with them, and they paid for the expenses of 100%, and they just wanted me there. So it was exciting with Hangman Products.
Tell us about negotiating the licensing agreement. We never really get into those type of details. We don't need the details, but how did you negotiate the royalty rate? Was it back and forth? Or was it one number they took? And how did you guys come to a number agreement?
It was a really low number when I went to Hangman Products. They had done license agreements before, but the license agreements they did were on these little tiny things, guys, like a hook that cost a penny or like a, that type of stuff. So, their royalties were super low, even on for those guys. They had a couple different guys that would always send them stuff like that. But we talked about it, it was super low. And as we got into it, and I explained to them what I brought to the table for them, and I said, look, I feel this product is going to do very well for both of us. I've sort of gone ahead of the game a little bit here. I already had one of my patents in place at that time on the product. My prototypes were perfect. You know, I had all these things sort of already taken care of from them, the design and stuff that they didn't have to deal with, the engineering on it. We didn't have to change anything, just take that bar, like I said before, across the top off. But, you know, we took that off and I said, I think I've come to the table here with all kinds of stuff, guys. I think it's deserved a little bit more royalty. So we negotiated back and forth and got the number up to where it was, to where I was happy, you know.
So getting from the raw prototype to seeing that beautiful green product there, how long did it take from there to there?
It took about, for me, pretty quickly, I think. I think it took about a year, you know.
Okay.
I started off with a little wooden thing, and I jumped into sort of some 3D stuff with it, and then just automatically took that and sent it off, and we had them built up, you know. So he already had some manufacturers out of the country that dealt with his products already at Hangman, and so it was pretty quickly. I just sent them the CAD drawings, and we went from there. It really was pretty quickly to get it into the green. You know, we wanted something that was going to pop as you walk down the aisle. You know, you often see all the time people come up with products and they pull it off and they go, oh, you know, all these different products are red. What color should I do? Well, you better do the exact opposite of what everybody else does, because you want them to focus on your product first as they walk in, and then go from there. So that's how I came up with sort of the green. I thought it was real poppy looking. You know, it was modern, you know, it was kind of a little edgy. So that's how we came up with the green.
So you have a patent, only one? Do you have multiple patents or just one?
No, I have four.
You have four.
I have one design and four and three utilities on it. Yeah.
And why so many?
Well, you know, we talk all the time about patents, guys. You know, it's one of those things, you know, it's some people hate them, some people love them. You know, it's kind of like the trademark of the name, you know, at the beginning. You know, I got all excited like everybody does. I knew I had a very, very viable product. Otherwise, hindsight, I wouldn't have jumped into a patent that quickly, but I did, because I knew this product was going to change the way that you did do this simple thing as hanging something on the wall. So I sent off and I started with the design patent, which, okay, design patent, people can change your design a little bit. But so we jumped right into the utility part of it. And that's where I ended up with the first utility patent on the product. This is what's really interesting, guys. A little fun fact for you, all you guys out there. And this is what blew me away, right? When you're talking about this, right? Something, you know, this simple, putting nails in the wall, right? And we all know when the patent office started clear back, you know, whatever, over 100 years ago, whatever. But I'm one of the only guys in history, guys. When you think of all technology today, this is what's crazy. I'm one of the only guys in history that's ever put the nail in the wall for you. And that blew me away, you know, because we're still living off hammer nail. So there was no reason to change it or come up with something. And to think that this little thing is the first product that's ever put the nails in for you was just sort of blew me away. So that was my utility, two nails at a time, puts it in for you, that sort of thing. The reason why a couple of more patents, and this is why I even, when I talk to a couple of the guys that I mentor on the side, I tell them about patents and things like this, you know, don't go whole hog into it because of a couple of things, right? I mean, you know, number one, they're very, very costly. You know, when you do land a licensee and you start talking to big box retailers, now they may want to tweak something. Okay. And that's exactly what happened here with the first utility patent, you know, with the bar across the top and different ways, the way the magnets went in, things like that. They suggested, you know, I think we want to do it this way a little bit on the nail holder, and I want to do this. And so, you know, now I had to go back in. I had to get two more utility patents, which now started that whole process of spending money, right? I mean, thank God my licensee took care of those, and the IP still stuck with me. But, you know, so that's how we came up with the additional utility patents is we were listening to what retailer really wanted. At the beginning it was Walmart, which we changed it for, and they didn't take it on right off the bat. So that's okay. But for now, because now we're there. But the second was changing the way the magnets went in and how the slider was adjusted, things like that. So that's how we came up with the extra utility patents. It's fantastic now. I mean, I got four four, fully issued patents, and we all know how long that takes, about 3 years to get a patent, right? So it was a kind of a trickling effect. Now I have them all. And
tell us a little bit about QVC. Did you knock on that door? Did they knock on the door? Because I saw you on TV pitching on QVC. How'd that?
Why, you couldn't sleep one night or what? You saw my TV? Yeah, QVC is interesting, guys. Both QVC and HSN, very, very interesting companies. I was at a trade show. In fact, I was at the, before it was called the Inspired Home Show, I think it was called, the Housework Show in Chicago a few years back before they changed it. I was in the booth demoing. I had a line of people demoing, things like that. Jim and them, their people were doing what they were doing. And these couple of people came up to me and said, they said, hey, have you ever thought of, putting your product on TV or launching it that way or anything like that? And I said, no, I haven't thought of it myself yet, but I said, I'm open to hearing what you guys have to say, And so they really loved the product. They loved the demo as soon as they saw it. And they said, this would be a fantastic item for TV. And we'd like you to come and sit and talk with one of our buyers, So, I got with Jim, they flew myself out and another gal out to Pennsylvania. We sat down with the buyers and that's, it's almost like being on QVC. They put you in this room with three or four people and they're all staring at you like Shark Tank, like this guy's not going to do any good. And they literally give you like 8 minutes, like you're on TV, and you just got to hammer that pitch out, and explain your product. And so that was pretty crazy. And then they accepted it, flew back again for QVC school. You have to go through training for 3 or 4 days to make sure that you are good enough in their eyes to go online, right? And not be like a big stumbler and all these kind of things. But I went through the class and got on QVC. It's a little different. There's a lot of different rules you have to have, as far as getting your product to them. It's got to be there, exactly what they say. And what's nice about QVC though, and HSN, if you ever have the opportunity to go that way, they do treat inventors very, very well as far as their margins are less for inventors than say like a Dyson vacuum or something like that. So they really sort of help out the inventor that way when they're initially getting your product on there and getting it launched. So it was great. The downside of that was right at the beginning of COVID. I thought, oh my gosh, what's going to happen, right? Everybody's sitting at home. Nobody's doing expendable income. Are they going to buy my product? I went on QVC and I nailed it the very first show. And we had a really good show the first show. We sold a lot of product. And the thing about going on those home shopping channels, you only get one chance to come back on air. It's all about how many dollars per minute that you're moving for them. It's not about units. It's about how many dollars that you're moving for, because it's television time. And those types of things. So I'm very excited to basically sell out my very first show. And I got back on the second show and then the third show and then things like that. I ended up almost 2.5 years with QVC. So very exciting, very humbling time, for a product like mine that goes on there and does so well, especially during 2 years of COVID. That was really a downside in the industry, And we do another stumbling block with QVC. Halfway through the second year, their warehouse burnt down and so did my products. So that was interesting as well.
Ginger asked a question, Michael, did you use QVC rep? So can you talk a little bit about the process of getting on QVC, how that came about?
We eventually talked to reps, yes, reps that work right with QVC. In fact, this company that I use is literally down the street, a couple hundred yards from QVC. They do a lot of business with them. I tried prior to that doing the QVC thing a little bit, by sending the product through their
product hunt sort of thing. But yeah, was it your licensee? You're on there basically because you did a license at that point, right? So you're on behalf of your licensee, essentially.
Exactly. And, the licensee actually contacted, and we talked to this one agency that works with QVC. Going direct with those companies is really, really tough to get on air. It's kind of, I don't know, you know, they have all these companies have their different portals, but they don't really do anything. They don't work. You know, you could send it to the end of time and you get to do your John letter and things like that. But we did go through an agency to actually get on air with them.
Yeah, we've had Tom Czar from Media One come on, and they represent Ring, Martha Stewart, Dyson. And a lot of people have tried to do it themselves, but they end up not really, it doesn't really work. You need an agent. They kind of manage all of it. They have relationships and they take a certain percent. Okay. But they really know how to get it done. You guys, I want to jump into this real quick. This is your new one.
Yeah.
Called Hang Hero. I love it. The colors have changed. It looks a little meatier. It looks a little bigger too. Is it bigger?
It is bigger. Yeah. Here's the other one. Here's the original.
Okay.
You can see how much bigger it got, right?
Got bigger. Okay. So you guys, let me tell you what's really interesting. When I saw this, I called Mike up. I said, kind of, what the heck's going on here? You've changed colors. You changed names. You must have changed licensees. Yeah. I mean, so tell that story, because you were licensing it to Hangman and somehow you're like, I'm taking it back and I'm going over here. So tell that story.
Well, when I signed with Hangman, we agreed to a 12-month yearly re-up on the product, you know, whether it was doing better, well, worse, do we raise the royalty, whatever we do. So we went along. The first year was fantastic. You know, we got into, you know, we're doing the home shopping, everything's rolling along and we're going through COVID and all these kind of things. But year two, it started to slack off just a little bit, not crazy, because we're still doing QVC. At that time, we also negotiated HSN at the same time as QVC, which is very, very hard to do. You have to have a totally different product, or you have to revamp the original product to get on both platforms. You very rarely get on both platforms. So I was really blessed to be on both of those for a couple of years. But so going through that process, I lost my train of thought there, Stephen.
Well, so what'd you say to go, hey, you guys, I'm going to somebody else? How'd you break up with the company and still stay friends?
Yeah, so as we went along there, it started failing a little bit as far as their marketing end of what they were going to do for me for Push and Hang, right? I went on with their company. I became part of a lost leader in their product line, because they have 2,500 products when you're talking about little hooks, right? And this and that. So my product was just an addition to their product. So I knew that going in. I knew my product was pretty substantial and was totally different than what they had. We went gangbusters for the first year and a half. And then they were sliding off of the marketing end of it. Well, they really didn't do a lot of marketing with any of their products, because most of their stuff it sells itself. It's been on the store shelves for 50 years, right? Okay. It's like buying a nut or a bolt. They're just at the store, you know? So we had these conversations about marketing and how are we gonna push this forward? How are we gonna build the category? How are we gonna, you know, change things up? And Jim was honest. He says, Mike, we're kind of old school here. We don't do a lot of marketing and stuff, you know? And I says, okay. I says, well, you know, I think we need to have a talk here, you know, the next time we meet. And so that's what we did. And I said, you know what? I said, I really need to build this product out further than what it is. And I don't think that we're heading in that direction with your company. So I said, you know, I said, I think it's best that we part ways. And he was super nice about it. He says, Mike, I fully understand what you're talking about. And I agree, you know, he goes, anything you need from me, you've got it down the road. But yeah, I agree. So so I had to get away from there because it wasn't building in the right direction. You've got to brand the thing, and you've got to get it out there if it's gonna really, really escalate down the road. So that's when I started looking for a new licensee.
And the licensee you have now, they're really big with the advertisement, because they're a DRTV company, aren't they?
They are. It's Spark Innovations, if you guys want to know, or Spark Innovators. Yeah, they are a As Seen on TV company. The As Seen on TV company is sort of this, again, this little lost leader that gets them to recognize your product to get into retail. They do so much volume and money in retail, but the TV aspect of it, they run with it off the beginning to get it into retail. But yeah, they did more marketing in 6 months than we ever did in 3 years. It's amazing. I mean, you can see it. If you just type in Hang Hero on Google, it's literally everywhere. And it sort of blew me away how quickly, how quickly we changed and got it up and running. We talked to Home Depot, was one of our very first retailers. And again, here we go back to the name change, the colors and things like that, right? Home Depot, what do you see, right? You see orange and black, Home Depot, it screams it all over it, right? Now the name again, Hang Hero, that's where it changed from Push and Hang to Hang Hero. Home Depot sat down with us and they said, you know, guys, your product's been very successful under this old brand of Push and Hang. But if we're going to put you in all of our stores and we're going to get after it, we really want to start over with a new name, new color scheme, the whole bit. So again, another focus group. We sat down, talked about all these different names and came up with Hang Hero, you know. And it sort of all evolved into, you know, you too can be a hero in your own house by using Hang Hero, all these little things. So, and they have a really cool little jingle that, you know, stays in your head if you ever hear it, it's online. But, so that's how we got into it. So that's how we ended up with the orange and the black and changed the name. And I tell you, ever since we changed from Hang Hero, it's just exploded. It's just really exploded by doing that. So we did have to pivot and do that. You know, I didn't want to confuse the public and the consumer by changing a name, right? Every year, every couple of years. But in this case, it really helped us. It was a benefit for us to do that.
Oh, Mike. So we had a question from Jose about how much did you invest developing a prototype? And I remember a conversation with you that I think is going to be very powerful for people. You had spent a ton of money on doing like a fancy demonstration video, right? And I don't know if you of course you're going to remember the story. And then you did one that your wife did and you just shot on the iPhone and you found it to be more effective. So can you talk a little bit about spending money? And that's kind of separate from the prototype, but on a video, the one that you spent with a professional production company, how much did you spend there? How much money did you spend on the one you shot with your iPhone? And why was the one with the iPhone even more effective? It's such an empowering story.
Well, I think, you know, again, getting into it, you're all excited and you live and learn, right? I mean, I was all excited. So I that was the first thing in my mind as I was building my prototype, you know, do I need to put a little commercial together, right? 30 second, 60 second commercial, whatever. So I started vetting these guys out and found these wonderful guys in Los Angeles, had a meeting with them. But yeah, that cost me about 15 grand right off the bat. Wow. You know, putting that television commercial together. It was a 60 second slot. They did a 30 second slot. That commercial never got on screen as an actual commercial. And I got to tell you, and I think what happened was as it evolved, if you go back 5-6 years, 60 second videos, 30 second videos, these explainer videos about your product, that was the thing. That's what everybody wanted to see. Now it's all evolved into 30 seconds and under, 20 seconds and under. Well, when I did the one with my wife, it got the most views that I've ever got in my life on a video. But the original one was 20 seconds, and then we cut it down to 9 seconds. 9 seconds to have her show you how to use it and pitch it. And I got to tell you, that's as quick as it was, because that's how when I demo my product and people see it, they got, can you show me again? That was like, how'd the nails go in and how'd that happen? And how did that happen? You know, but that 9 second video got the most views I've ever had. And it's just simply of her. She actually just turned the product over, put a nail into it, pushed it on the wall, hung a picture, 9 seconds. And there was no verbiage, just a little bit of audio track to it. And got the most views ever. You know, the attention span of anybody now is like, I think it's now it's down to, in fact, I just looked this up 2 weeks ago, it's less than 8 seconds is the attention span of a human. In fact, they said that a goldfish has more attention span than a human. So we're down to less than 8 seconds. And that makes sense, because when you're sitting in front of somebody, whether it's a buyer, whether it's an agency, whether it's QVC, HSN, you have literally seconds to get your point across and impress somebody. And that's all the time you have, you know, so scaling those videos down, which video is king right now, especially on Instagram. Second videos are like this. It's just constant. If you do second videos on your product, put the right keywords in, your product will explode, and you will be so surprised how quickly it does that from a very, very, very short video now, you know.
Hey, Mike, how did you stay motivated through all of the ups and downs?
You know, guys, I mean, honestly, it's kind of the kind of person I am. You know, I'm a very positive, I very much when I try something or I think it's going to be a good item, whether it's in just an idea or a product or something I'm doing around the house, or, you know, I'm just pumped. I'm just exploded. You know, the two things I learned very quickly in this crazy inventing world is, number one, you got to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, you forget even starting. Just forget it. Just don't even start. You have to believe in yourself. You know, you've got to have that mindset of waking up every day and you're excited and I'm going to work on this and I'm going to keep working on this and I'm going to tell people about it. I'm going to keep going, you know, and, you know, you got to have that mindset, and you have to believe in your product. You have to believe in what you're doing. And that's what I did from day one. I never let it go. I often had a lot of people tell me this is not going to happen. You know, nobody's going to buy it. Nobody's going to do it. We all hear this over and over. I had my share of the 100 of no's, 150 no's, no problem. I got them all day. I got Dear John letters, you know, coming out of my whatever, you know, but I got those constantly. But, you know, no was never in my makeup. That's not my vocabulary, you know. I'm going this way and I'm not going that way, you know. And I stumbled many a times, guys, you know, just kicking it off, you know, I was going to throw it back on the shelf. COVID hit. What am I going to do there? And God, now we're wasting 2.5 more years. Now it's like starting over from scratch. You know, my very first pitch that I did at a hardware show, I was going to be picked up by 3 or 4 people. Well, that lasted about 45 minutes. And, you know, now you're back to square one. But you get back home, you go, now what? You know, so now I'm starting over. But I never let anything come in the way of, you know, my final destination, and that's getting this product in everybody's home. So, you know, I kept that with me.
How many times did you want to give up?
Oh, probably at least 5 times over the last 5 years, you know. And my wife was, I tell you what, my biggest fan, you know, hey, if you want to shelve it, I'm okay. Put it on the shelf and forget about it, you know. But if you think you got something, Michael, she said, you know what? She goes, I know you. She goes, you look what you do, just even around here. She goes, do it, you know. So I kept with it. Yeah, it was a long journey, guys. It was a long journey. You know, I even from my very beginnings, guys, and I'll tell you this really quickly, as a child, you know, we grew up a very impoverished family, you know, no generational money in my family. You know, nobody's going to hand me down some house, and grandma's not going to give me, you know, her new car. And, you know, I am a self-made from day one, from zero all the way up. You know, when I was 13, I had my first job. When I was 16, I bought my own clothes. When I was 17, guys, I lived in a water tower. You know, you drive down, you see a water tower on a farm, right? I lived in a water tower for 2.5 years, a trap door with a ladder that went straight up and down. Talk about humbling. And, you know, about where you came from, you know, I didn't go to college back in the day. I'll admit, you know, I went to a city college, but never a degree. But I worked for a Fortune 500 company. I knew my capabilities. I won the President's Award for a Fortune 500 company for innovative packaging back in the day. They only give it to one person a year. I got that award. So it was very, very crazy. But then from there, I developed a program for them that they're still using today. They shut our division down, bought me out. So once again, now you're going back down again. Now you're thinking, what the heck happened, right? So then I got in the crazy world of real estate because I could be my own boss. And of course, my aha moment, got into the inventing world, you know, which I wish I would have got in a long, long time ago, because I really have been doing a lot of different sort of product ideas forever, you know. And so that's how all that sort of came about.
There's a really interesting question I think we all have. When you switched licensees, were you able to help with who manufactured it? The same people that manufactured it? Was it different people? Did you have to start over? How'd you do that?
It was different people. You know, from the Hangman products to Spark, it was totally different. Spark, obviously, bigger company. They sell the products by the millions, right? Most DRTV companies, and as seen, they won't even take your product on if they don't think they can sell minimum 1 million units minimum. That's it. If they don't think they're going to sell that, they're not going to take it on, because most of those products, they do sell 10, 20, 25 million, units, by doing that. So DRTV had three manufacturers already set up overseas that they could jump back and forth off of three different manufacturers, which is why we got our product so quickly. We got our product made and in port in less than 6 to 8 weeks, start to finish from overseas with all the turmoil and things that are going on right now. So, and with Hangman products, that took quite a while. It was minimum 4 months to get anything back from them.
What about negotiations? Because now you have a patent, you've got a track record, you've already sold it, you've done great. A new company comes in, they're going to do some other changes. Did you have any leverage to get a better royalty, or is it pretty standard?
The second company I did really well. The second company I got, I got 3% more than Hangman. Wow. So I had a lot of leverage there because I had everything in place. All they literally had to do was call their manufacturer and really pick a color. I mean, because I had everything, I had everything in place, I even had the tooling if I wanted it from Hangman, but we didn't need it because they, they had all their stuff already in place, and it was quick. It was very, very quick. I was very impressed how quickly and how well the product came out the first time that we looked at it for sampling.
Nice.
Can you talk a little bit about, because I think Co is maybe new and says, is it more profitable and easier than selling on your website than on Amazon? And then Jennifer expanded on that and said, and or box stores versus online. So can you talk about where it was selling before with Hangman, where it's selling now with Spark, and kind of how some of these DRTV companies work? Like, I mean, they're doing advertisements, but most of the people are picking them up in the big box stores. At least historically, that's how it's been. But I know it's changing. So where is your product selling? Where could people buy it?
Well, right now, I mean, it's selling a lot better now in big box, now that we've sort of expanded the arena, right? When we first started, our first retail store was very, very slow because it was Walgreens. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you're throwing a product on the shelf in Walgreens. Nobody knew what it was. They had no clue what that thing was, right? It was just a kind of a funky little colored item that was on the shelf. But, once we got into bigger box stores, expanded the product more, so much better selling it. I think, in selling it in retail versus, selling it online yourself as a Shopify or some, I think it totally depends on the product. What type of product are you selling, which is really going to determine whether or not it's going to sell better online. My sales are okay online and things like that. Nothing like it's doing in retail. For the simple fact that even though you're selling it yourself online, you open up your own little website, right? It's the same old story, guys. You've got to drive people to your website. Well, how are you going to drive people to your website? It's all about spending more and more money in marketing. So how much is that chewing up your bottom line when your margins are so low already? So it's hard sustaining online, pushing that, especially when you have a $20 item, in my opinion, But retail's done very, very well with this, guys,
Are you on TikTok or any of those other social media platforms during your pitching?
I do Facebook more than anything. I do some Instagram, on my stuff. TikTok, I sort of stride away with it. And actually, I'm kind of glad because it may not be here much longer, guys. In fact, it's funny, Biden said today that he banned TikTok now for the US, banned, which really doesn't mean anything because everybody's still going to use it for now, but TikTok, there's really, really some good insight rumors that TikTok will be going away in the future as far as the United States is concerned. So, now all of those tens of millions of followers are going to go somewhere else, they're going to come somewhere else. But
has anybody knocked you off yet?
Nobody's really. Nobody's. I get emails all the time from people with, they send me a little picture and they go, Mike, this guy pick your product, blah, blah, blah. And it's always a marketing tool. It's never something that puts the nail in the wall for you, but I've never been, I kind of explain it this way, to people I talk to about, people knocking you off. And I think, think about it, they're not looking to knock people off that are selling, 50,000 units or 100,000 units or 500,000, maybe millions. Once you get to the millions and millions of units being sold, now they're getting really interested. Like, hey, I think maybe we can do something with this product and knock it off. But I don't think people, I mean, I've never had anybody have a sense of coming after me or knocking it off for what I do. I mean, think about it. They've got to set up their own tooling. They got to set up their own manufacturing. They got to do their warehousing. They got to get people to push it out there. And you know what? Unless you're selling just a ton of product, I don't think they're going to come after you in a sense.
Mike, we have people that really know what licensing is, and then we have new people. So can you really briefly explain the benefits of licensing? Angelina asked, how did you get into so many places? Did you have a rep help you? So I think she's not fully understanding, because she's probably new, that you licensed it to Hangman and they had all this distribution in all these stores. Then you switched and you licensed it to Spark and they had distribution. They got you in Home Depot. I know when I saw you at the hardware show, you're very happy about being in Home Depot, which I think is a great place for it to be. Can you explain the basics of licensing on what, when you license to a company, what they do for you with distribution, the power of that?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, you can look at it both ways, you know, venturing or licensing. You know, I didn't have the capital behind me to start venture, you know, the product myself. Cause I looked at it very simply. If I was going to retail, I probably couldn't even fill my very first PO that a retailer would give me, because, you know, you're looking at a couple hundred thousand dollars. I didn't have the capital to do that. I had to figure out the easiest way to do that. I didn't have access to my own warehousing. I didn't have my manufacturing. I don't have sales reps. I'm the sales rep, you know, that's all I have. So once I licensed, the very first thing that you say, thank goodness, is it what I call stop the bleeding. You know, you're not spending any more money. You know, they take it on from there. From that point on, licensing, they spent all the money. They have their own people in place. Since they have been in the business for a long time, if you get with companies that have been around, they have already have their own warehousing, their own sales reps, their own people that have to do that. You don't have to get involved. You don't have to call the retailer. You don't have to call anybody. They take care of all of that for you, which is the beauty of what I like about licensing, because I can concentrate on my own other products now without having to always constantly all day long worry about what am I going to do? How's Hank Hero doing? How's it going to go? Is it going to sell? I don't have to worry about that because they take care of all that, especially when I got into the home shopping end of it, you know, and also Spark and DRTV. They have a army of sales reps out there that are all across the country. And those guys are hitting up everybody all day long. You know, they're going to Home and they're going to Lowe's and Home Depot, and they're going to Best Buy, or they're going to wherever, whatever kind of product you have. They've got guys that just cover that and blanket that like you can't believe, you know. No, so that's what gets that out there so quickly, so well, you know. And they have access, you know, where we're pounding the phones, we're asking for somebody behind the scenes, you know, can somebody call me back? We're sending sell sheets and letters and all these things out. All that stops, you know. They have all that under control because they've done it over and over again by the products that they have licensed prior. So I would never venture a product on my own. I don't think ever, you know. I mean, I love the licensing aspect. I love going to the mailbox. I love getting a royalty check. And I don't have to worry about it, you know. All I have to worry about for me, are they still pushing and marketing my product? Now, I'm not going to tell you that you just sit back, because sometimes you're working more in a sense once you're licensed, because you still have to market your product per se. In other words, it's all about branding, right? And I tell people, you're half of your product, you know. It's just like you watch Shark Tank, right? What sells the product? The story is more than the product in most cases, you know. And it's the same thing with what I have here, you know. I'm not at every single store to demo a product, because there's not 5,000 of me to go around the country. So I got to keep pushing the demo, educating. This is what the product does. This is what it is. So you're constantly branding yourself. Okay. And, you know, and I've done that through pitch competitions and trade shows and things like this. Guys, I've made a lot of money doing pitch competitions. I've made anywhere from $200 to $50,000 in cash and prizes on one show just doing pitch competitions. And I absolutely love it. You know, there's no better way to understand your demographics, your customer base, than learning how to pitch your product the correct way. And no better person to do it than you, you know. Even if you have fortunate to get on QVC, the home shopping channels, you can hire a pitch person or a host. It's going to cost you $1,000 a show, 8 minutes to have somebody pitch it for you. But who are they going to trust? And who are they going to believe, right? Your customer base, when you're staring into a TV, they want to listen to you, the inventor. They want to know who you are, how you did this, and you know, what's the benefit for me? You know, so that's how it worked. Yeah.
You guys, we're coming up on the hour, so I want everybody to put your thank you notes in. Thanks, Mike. This is really great information. You've given us so much to think about and to motivate us. So please put your thank yous in there, guys. We really appreciate it. We're also going to go a little bit longer in case you have some other questions, maybe some other private rooms. We don't want to hold up Mike. But I wanted to say one thing before we end this with Mike. I love this product. I'll pitch it. I got to say right now, this product works. And I'll tell you the reason why. I have so many pictures around my house I have to hang. And every time I hang a picture, I've got to ask my wife. I've got to get the ruler out. I got to mark it. And I'm making so many holes in the wall. I just destroy the wall before I get that thing straight. When I got my first one, and I have a couple of them, I started using this. It was so easy. I didn't have to ask my wife. I could do it by myself. The pictures were hung straight every single time. This works. You guys, if you know someone that needs it, and if you want a great gift, please buy it. Because Mike, you did a great job with this product, because I'll tell you, it works every single time and it works beautifully. I cannot thank you enough for that.
No, thank you so much. I'll give you another little fun fact. It's the number one closing gift for realtors in all of Southern California, you know, and you're talking about $1 million houses. When you give the keys to somebody and you give them a $20 item, then that's how I pitch it to realtors in that industry. I tell them, I go, if you want to make thousands of dollars in commission off a $20 closing gift, this is it, you know, and it works. I tell you, it works. So it's been incredible, you know.
Well, let's do this.
Mike is such an incredible example of an inventor that's willing to pitch his own product. A lot of inventors license it to the company, let them handle it. But if you guys are up for it, you guys can do, and the company's okay with it. You can do what Mike did. He's such a perfect example of that. You know, he wants to stay involved, and I think what he's done is amazing.
Well, Andrew, we're going to be doing some other classes, and I think Mike hit the nail on the head here.
Yeah.
I think what's happening here is that a lot of these companies are maybe short-staffed, or maybe they have 1,000 other SKUs, or maybe they're just not good on marketing, or maybe they don't have the story to tell that Mike does. Mm-hmm. And the product, all the inventors that are watching tonight, you're newsworthy. People want to hear your story. You have the ability to sell product for your licensee. So Mike is right. Don't just license it and walk away. No, now your work actually just started. You should look at these companies as a company that's going to do the distribution. They're going to get in all the stores, collect all the money. They're going to do everything for you. You should be out there creating demand. And I think that's the big shift, because you have all these different platforms. And I'm seeing that most people, Mike, have told me the same thing you said to me. My licensee isn't doing enough. And once I heard it from you, I've heard it from others. And you found one that is doing more, but I don't think you ever truly walk away if you really want to have a home run hit. That's what I think.
And I think a lot of people are afraid of it. You know, they're afraid to go back to the licensee and have that conversation, you know, and they don't want to ruffle the feathers, or they don't want to, you know, hey, it's your product. They're just renting it from you. So, you know, be very boisterous. If you think you have an issue, call them up, sit down, have a meeting, whatever, have a Zoom call, you know, and talk to them about it. You know, it's and you're both going to come out on the good end of that. You know, there's only three things I'll leave you guys with. And I got to tell you, you know, believe in yourself is number one. If you don't believe in yourself, don't take that step forward. Number two, believe in your product wholeheartedly, 100,000%. But believe in it after you've figured out whether it's been viable or not. Okay. Please don't waste months and years about a product that will never get to market. I know sometimes it's hard to hear, but make sure that product's viable, okay? So many people run out there and just at the beginning spend all this money only to find out their product they threw in the trash. I mean, you know, just those three things will carry you the entire way. If you have a viable product that you know is going to make it to the end, and you know you're changing the way somebody does something in their life on a very little scale or a very large scale, stick with it. Don't ever give up. You know, you can't, you know. Belief is a powerful thing, guys, when you're doing inventing, you know. And one other thing, inventing, and I've always said this, inventing has never been a part-time job. So if you're going to get into inventing, stick with it, you know. Don't sit on the couch and tell yourself next Wednesday, I think I'm going to do a little bit of drawing today, you know, and then I'll do. No, it's It's 24/7, 365, guys. And that's how I made it. And that's how I became successful with this product. Okay. It is a journey, but I tell you, the rewards are unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know what? Because you get to go on shows like this and talk to the InventRight crew and there you go. I mean, how much better can that be? Right.
Yep.
I mean, Steven's
such a great supporter.
And that's always been right in here. You know, he's followed me from day one. He's a guy that always believed in what I had there. So I appreciate it, Steven. You guys, thank you so much.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you for coming on. We're going to stay an extra 30 minutes, Mike. You can stay or leave. I know you're really busy. But what we want to do, Benjamin, we need to get Benjamin here. We want to ask you guys if you want to stay another 30 minutes, if you want to have some other talks, or even if you want to have some private rooms on certain topics, we can do that too. But we're going to go long. We're going to go a happy hour for another 30 minutes. Mike, you're the best.
Thank you so much, guys.
Hey, thank you, Mike.
Mike, you out? You want to answer a couple more questions that people have? There's a ton of questions in the chat.
I'm good. If you guys have a couple questions, absolutely.
All right.
Okay. How does everybody? Yeah. So as Mike's answering some more questions, if anybody has any ideas of anything that they would like to break off and talk about, if they want a room with Steven, if they want a room with Andrew, if you guys want to talk about anything, please enter that in the chat. I see Scott Putnam in the crowd too. Scott's a amazing InventRight coach. Scott probably be great to pin up here too. Maybe we could take advantage of Scott being.
You guys, can we do
Scott's
this?
Like, I was just hanging out. I'm not even working right now, dude.
Thank instead you, of doing Scott. Everything to the chat, can we open it up to people can actually talk if they want to? Yes, no? Is that too
yeah,
hard?
Yeah, raise a hand. If you want to be unmuted or within reason, you could unmute yourself.
I'll enable unmuting yourself, but just if you guys can just make sure to remute yourself when you're done, and if there's dogs barking something, don't unmute yourself. If so, now you have the ability. There's a gentleman that's raising his hand. I'm going to go to full view. I can't see his name. Go ahead, unmute yourself.
Andrew, we need to see everybody.
Yeah, I need to see everybody. I'll take you off spotlight.
Cal,
go ahead.
You're unmuted.
Hi, I have a question. Going to the DirecTV channel, are you not concerned about the short lifespan of these products? How do you compare? Well, what is your thought about using this channel as opposed to going with a more traditional manufacturer as far as the longevity of your royalty stream and so forth?
Well, there's a couple of ways to look at that. You know, when you go on a DRTV, you have to look at a lot of things we don't see behind the scenes. A lot of the things we seem that they are gimmick items, maybe, or a niche or a little niche item that we think are going to go away. And then you can look at all kinds of different things on there, right? The flexible hose, the copper pans and stuff. Those items are literally still going strong today, and they have sold over 20 to 25 million units of those items. You know, so. It's all about first to market. It's all about getting it out there. If I sold that amount of items in the first couple, 3 years, I'm okay. I'm happy. You know, I think for most of us, we all dream in the back of our mind too. We're always looking for that end game, right? We're always looking for the exit strategy. We can't get there, trickling along the way for 10, 20 years, you know, those big numbers that those DRTV guys are throwing out there as far as units sold for your product is absolutely incredible. That I don't think in many cases you could never do that on your own or getting into one or two retailers, things like this. You know, I knew my product is probably going to be a longevity product, not just because of DRTV, because it's actually changing the way that we've done something for literally 1,000 years with the nail and hammer thing. So it's going to be a tool that's going to hang on the shelf for quite a while. The numbers are always going to fluctuate, obviously, no doubt. But I wouldn't worry about so much about that aspect of it, longevity and things like that with DRTV, because they could literally push a lot of product for you. And in some cases, you're not going to get that much. But like I said earlier, they're all looking for that million item minimum count in most cases. So if you sold a million items on your product, on a $20 item, I mean, you can think about that. We're talking about the numbers now, good right? Day. So, you know, whatever royalty you have, if they sell 1 million units, well, in most cases, that's $500,000 or more to you in your pocket, you know? So it adds up rather quickly, and the royalties can be very rewarding. So I definitely wouldn't shy Andrew, away from.
Let's do a family shot here.
Yeah, thank you, Bev.
Yeah, thank you, Bev. If everybody could raise their hand or give a thumbs up just for a second, keep it up, and I'm going to take a screen capture. Here we go. That's screen number one. Screen number two. Only take a sec. I promise it won't hurt. Screen number three. There we go. Okay, we're good. We're good.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for the answer.
That's a great question.
Yeah, that was a great question and great answer, too.
That sounds like an incredible day, Mike, to have those kind of numbers off of something. That sounds like one of those days where you're smiling.
Well, that's crazy, guys. Hey, when I was on the Home Shopping Channels in 8 minutes, you know, I sold 58,000 units in 8 minutes. So, I mean, it's a very, very humbling, guys. I mean, you know, when you think about that in your mind, you're going, oh, my God, you know. So, you know, 58,000 units, that's 10 tanker loads coming over from China, you know, 10 container loads. That's a lot to sell in 8 minutes, you know. And, you know, so once you keep getting back on there. And, Stephen, you guys talk about this all the time. You know, royalty rates and things like this, you know, most of us think that we're getting such low royalty rates, but again, we're talking about the numbers. So now when you get this out there, and now I'm in 8,000 stores, guys. So think about this. I've only got to sell one item per week, and I'm shipping 8,000 items a week all year round. You know, it's just, it's incredible when you talk about the numbers. Yeah.
No, it's the volume. People don't realize if you sell one a week, that's huge.
Yeah.
Right. So you're right. It's the volume. I think what's really interesting, you know, DRTV can sell so much so fast than some of the other methods might take a couple years to get 1 million. They can do 1 million really, really quick. So that's a great question, though. But
Stephen, when you're talking about one a week, you mean if you're in a ton of stores and you're selling one a week right. per store, it just adds up, right?
That's yeah. I mean, you guys, if you're yeah. in 8,000 stores one a week, that's 8,000 every week.
Yeah.
That so times exciting. Four, I mean, that's volume, guys.
I will give you, here's a little tidbit on that. When I was with Hangman Products, they had a no stud TV hanger that they sold to Walmart, $22.50. Walmart sold 25,000 a week all year round.
Wow.
25,000 a week on on this little bar, $22 bar. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's crazy numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Ben, do we have anybody else?
No, so Antonio had his hand. Antonio, you're unmuted, brother.
I just did it. Well, I'm an inventor myself with some U.S. patent and a foreign patent. My question to Mike is inventing, developing products and bringing products to the market, it's not simple. It's complicated. So my question to you is, you sound like an expert. So how did you get there?
How did I get to market in general?
No, how do you get to be so knowledgeable in so many different areas, patent, licensing, manufacturing, prototyping?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, how much are you willing to invest in yourself, right? I mean, from day one, I was 150% from day one till 5 years later. I never let up, never let down. I wanted to learn everything about it and just keep feeding myself with it over and over and over. And that just pushed me to that next level, you know, without being scared. I wasn't hesitant. I, you know, I had my down days, but then I had so many more up days than down. But, you know, I think it's just wanting, how bad do you want it? You know, is how quickly that you're going to, you know, accept all that stuff, you know, and that's what I did, you know.
You know what's really interesting? I think that's a great question. How do you become an expert? You invest in yourself. And maybe time, effort, maybe you go to school, maybe read a book, maybe watch YouTube, maybe get coaching, but you're educating yourself. So I think the question is, do you really believe in what you're doing? And are you willing to make that sacrifice? And are you willing to make that commitment to learn everything? Because Mike didn't become an expert overnight.
Okay. Thank you.
How long did it take, Mike?
Took, well, 5 years. 5 years of consistently battling it every day. You know, I mean, you have to want it so bad, and you have to believe in your product so much that, you know, it consumes you. But it's not every second of the day. I'm just saying I never let this product go. I never stopped believing in it. I never stopped talking to people about it. I never stopped pitching it ever, you know, and I think it's just, I just, like Stephen said, how much do you want to invest in yourself to do this, you know? And I think it goes back to, you have to brand yourself just as much as the product, you know. Don't think the product's going to sell itself, guys. I mean, you've got to brand yourself along with the product, you know. I always said, you know, to many, many people, you know, an idea doesn't sell itself. It's yourself that sells the idea. So, you know, you keep that in your mind constantly, and you will get there. You will get there.
If I can ask another question, you share kind of all the good things that you did, but is any experience, something that didn't work, that you can share with us, so to kind of help us prevent from happening again? So any bad experience in the journey of developing the product?
Mike, he's basically saying, share a big mistake you made.
Well, I think the biggest one for anybody.
He wants to take you down a notch, Mike.
Yeah.
He doesn't believe it. He thinks you sound too perfect.
He wants to keep it real.
Right?
No, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think the biggest mistake for me, and I stumbled for this for a year and a half, I wasn't willing to take anybody else in. It was just me trying to figure it out, try to learn it, try to do this. I was stubborn in that way, you know, because I've always done most everything on my own and just sort of jumped in and figured it out. But I learned very quickly that you cannot do this yourself. I don't care if you do have a licensee, if you do get your product on TV, if you get it in the stores, you need to surround yourself with other people that know what they're doing as well, and talk to them and learn from them. That was always my biggest stumbling, was trying to take it on myself, which I never would do again. I would never take it on and do it myself.
Thank you.
So, Mike, we have someone, I don't know what to call you by. Your name is registered as Zoom user, but you have the Golden Gate Bridge in the background. If you'd like to unmute yourself, you can ask your question. Beautiful view.
Okay, there we go. Hi, I'm Blanche Heron, and hey, Blanche. I have two innovative patents, or two utility patents, which I received within 6 months of filing. And the product I've worked on for the last 13 years, patiently, persistently, just like he said, you have to be involved, you have to learn all the aspects of it. You're learning as you go, and you're making mistakes, but of course we fall down and we get back up. Long story short, I don't have a prototype yet. That's my next phase. So how can I get into an agency or on QVC or with anyone without a prototype? I can't, huh?
No, I'm not going to say you can't, but I'm going to tell you their timelines are very strict. You know, if they see something that mm-hmm. they think is going to be very profitable, even on a drawing or whatever you have sent them, can you get mm-hmm. that manufactured quick enough for them to put it on? You know, is it going to work out that way? Let me ask you this one question. When did you get your utility patents? At the beginning, or when did you decide to get utility patents?
The product that I invented was, let's see, how do I put it? I got one in 2019. I got one in 2020. Since then, the federal government is looking for what I have. So I know there's a need.
Why can't you build a prototype?
Oh, my goodness. Did she just drop off? I think that we just lost her.
That was not a good moment for
her. That was a mic drop moment. hopefully that wasn't the government.
Well, maybe she'll come back then. Maybe,
yeah, because I was so interested in why did she jump into utility patents and how much did she spend, and when she said she didn't even have a product that was even prototyped yet.
I'm back.
Well, there you go.
There you are.
My friend and I wrote the patents ourselves. We went to an attorney in Utah that we were introduced to, and he put it in patent language, sent it to the patent office, and within 6 months, we got the patent on both of them. There's nothing out there.
But why don't you build a prototype?
The finances. I don't have the finances. Every corner I turn, it's a cost. It's a cost. And like you said, it's just me. I haven't opened up to anyone yet. And I'm willing to, but I just have to find the right group of people in the right partnership.
Why don't you find, you know what's really interesting about this, you guys, and I think we need to talk more about this. Sometimes you can't do it all, like Mike said.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. So instead of stopping and waiting, why don't you find a partner that can build prototypes and build a partnership?
Yes, that's how I got introduced to you, Stephen. another company up in Silicon Valley. I'm here in California as well. And they said it was too big for them, and they sent me to you.
Does this product have a lot of moving parts or something, or is it very complicated? Or
no, not at all. It's just a technology product. Actually, it's three products, three separate products, and they're all for people with disability, men, women, and children.
I got it. I remember. Thank you for coming on. You've got a great product too. So, you know, sometimes...
And I've had a briefing at the Pentagon, and they've given me three letters of support.
Wow. You know, sometimes, and we should do more of a talk about this, you guys, sometimes there's obstacles in your way, and you have to find a way around them. And this is an obstacle she has. She needs someone to help her with the prototype. And I think what we're thinking about in the future for this organization, IGA, is create a place where you can find partners. We do think that when you start to connect with each other, you might find some like-minded individuals. Hey, I'm great at building prototypes, but I'm not great at reaching out to companies. I'm great at doing this, but I don't want to do this. And maybe, just maybe, you guys can start to connect and start to build your own little companies by building a group of people that can actually get some of the work done. Because I just hate to think someone is struggling because they can't get a prototype. I hate it. I don't like
it. Yeah, the engineering side and the tooling and all that is expensive.
Well, and I think I got a feeling of the area that you're in. A lot of products, just a virtual prototype is fine. But then there's other areas, and that's probably your area. Steven, sounds like Steven's seen what you're doing, where it's like, no, you have to make a prototype. Is that what it is, Steven? Is it that type of product?
She's going to need that.
Yeah, some product, but not all products you need that, but some you do. You know, and then if you're low on funds, it's hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
Okay.
And like I said, I've been at it since 2008 to get it to this point where I am today, and that's ready for prototyping and hit the market.
Maybe we can help with that later with what we're going to try to do. And we'll talk a little bit about what IGA is going to become, because we're going to try to solve some of these problems for you guys. Okay.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Somebody in chat in Napa. There's somebody in Napa that says they're great at building prototypes in the chat. Pretty close to you. Diego's got a question. Diego's got his camera on too.
Oh, San Diego.
Correct.
Yeah, hello. One question is, Mike, how do you manufacture the product for the first time when you started to sell it in the small shops? Would you try to use, do you suggest to use 3D printing?
Well, I mean, that's 3D printing has come so far now. It's so inexpensive to do 3D printing, you know, to get, especially to do prototyping, you know, especially if you don't have a lot of working parts to your invention, 3D printing is definitely the way to go. I mean, you can't really manufacture off of 3D printing and get your product into different outlets and even small boutiques or stores or whatever, just because 3D printing won't hold up, obviously. Over time, you know, it's more of a visual aid for you to take in and try to sell it. But 3D printing is definitely a way to go to get you started. Absolutely, you know, because it's
but
very.
Your licensee started manufacturing before you. Didn't do any manufacturing, did you?
No.
The licensee did the manufacturing, Diego.
Yeah. So Diego's kind of like, he's wondering, how can I do a small batch and sell it? So Diego, you can do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But like at InventRight, the other business that Steve and I run, where we coach inventors to license products, I would say 95% of our students that license products, they've never sold a single unit. They do what Mike did, who's a former student too. They licensed it to a big company, started manufacturing and selling it. So to think that you have to sell a few units yourself to prove it is not true. I think if you sell 500 units, no big company is ever going to be impressed. You sell 50,000, they might be, but that's a very expensive endeavor. You have to decide if you want to get into that. So it's not a necessary thing in order to license, but you might want to be venturing. At IGA here, we're about adventuring or licensing, and you just want to learn how to do small production runs. And it's such a specific product to the question to the type of product that you're manufacturing. It's not really answerable, but it's always going to be fairly expensive. Steven, can you tell the story about the guitar picks, maybe the short version? That would probably be helpful for Diego and a lot of people on like what it really costs to manufacture a product.
Yeah, most people don't really understand that. And just because you can maybe buy some product and sell it on Amazon is probably not the smartest thing to do. I was in the guitar pick business making guitar picks, and they only cost 3 cents. Pretty inexpensive, right? But people don't realize to really be in business, it took about $250,000.
Do you have a guitar pick to show?
I was going to show. I've got a ton of them here, but it took more than here's one little skull, but they're all different shapes. And you know, to really be in business, there's a vampire here. Cool. They were lifestyle guitar picks, and we ended up selling tens of millions of them. But to really be in business, to be in Walmart, 7-Eleven, you know, we had 30 people, you know, in a factory, and we had the marketing team, and we spent years, and $250,000. That's just like you're just starting out. People don't realize. Yeah, I'm gonna order a minimum guarantee, a minimum quantity. I'm gonna put it on Amazon. I'm gonna sell it. You're not in business. That's a hobby, right?
So the suggestion here is to find maybe either a small company to manufacture, a licensee, and help them to sell the product.
Well, you don't want small, you want big. The companies that Mike licensed to were not small companies. They had distribution everywhere. So when you license, you're licensing to a company, it's their money, it's their workers, and it's their distribution. Maybe they're in 30,000 stores. You would never want to license to a small mom and pop operation because you're just getting a royalty. Most common is 5% on every unit. You want to sell a lot of units. That's what Mike did. Is that helpful?
I
think, Andrew, for everybody that doesn't know licensing, if you're part of this group, if you're listening to this conversation, you don't know licensing, that's what Mike did, was he licensed his product. And to Antonio's point earlier, how did Mike learn all of this stuff? That's one of the benefits of licensing, is you don't have to learn every aspect of everything. And I think that's why Mike likes licensing. It's because he is a hands-on guy, but he learned that he can't do it all. And so that's how you live in that space.
He didn't have the funds. So you guys, product licensing has been around for 200 years. It's not new. But what you're basically trying to find is a company that's already in business. That's got manufacturing, distribution. They've got everything in place. The one thing they don't have is a great idea from you. So when you knock on the door and you show them a product and it fits in their product line, they do all the work and you collect a royalty on each and every one they sell. So it's a beautiful business model. And some industries really count on us. The DRTV as seen on TV, most of those ideas come from us. The toy industry, most of those ideas comes from us. Even a company like OXO, which is a kitchen company, most of those products were licensed from designers or design firms. So these companies need products from us. And I think Mike said it beautifully. He didn't really want to do that, knew he didn't have the finances, found a great partner to do the heavy lifting. Now, Mike is really smart now because he's a good pitchman. I think he's really smart by saying, look, I got to stay involved. I have to tell my story. I'm going to help them sell more product because they need, you know, the people need to know how it works because it's magical. It's very simple to do. And once he does a demo, Mike, when you go to Home Depot and do a demo, how fast do you sell out?
I've sold out every Home Depot now in less than 30 minutes. I sell out all of their product in less than 30 minutes. So yeah, it's crazy. So that's the power of demoing, you know, versus, and that's the stumbling block I've always had. Yeah, we have a QR code on every box, but this big. But you know what? That says demo. Click here. People don't click there. They don't get their phone out. They look at it like whatever. But you know, we've talked about all kinds of things, little LCD screens, little whatever you can think of to get that demo to that person. And it's a tough one, guys. We still haven't figured that out without actually attaching something to the display that's going to go dead, and then the store personnel is not going to fix it or keep up with it. So, you know, you're right back to the same old thing.
Here's my thought on this. If Mike can sell a product that really kind of requires a demonstration, he can sell as many as he's sold. Most of your products don't require that. A lot of products that you look at it and you're like, okay, I get it. So if Mike can be successful with a product that requires demonstration and is creating some confusion for people, like for some of your products that don't require that, that's a hell of a lot easier. They just walking by, they see it on the store shelf, they go, oh, that's interesting. Okay, I'm going to buy it, throw it in my cart.
See, I think that Mike should really dive into all the social media platforms and do those short videos on LinkedIn now, on TikTok. I think TikTok is, someone else is going to buy it. It's not going to go away, I don't think. It's too big. I think wherever he goes, he needs to educate everybody. So everybody on this planet knows his product. So when they go to the store, they buy it. That's not a bad problem to have. Okay. So, and I think he can do it because he's so good at it. He just needs to figure out the social media channels and focus there. That's my opinion. Yeah.
So, Mike, I don't know when you need to leave. There's one question here that I've read that I would really love to hear your answer on. And it's not about inventing, but I'd love to hear you answer it. If you need to run, don't feel like you've got to stick around for forever. We've got a ton of questions, but Tryman asks, Mike, how did you develop your character, pleasing personality, pleasant aroma, no, he didn't put that, pleasing personality and whatnot to be able to connect with your licensees? And Mike, that's something that I've noticed about you is I've never seen you have a cross moment with anyone. It's like you're always in pitch mode. You're very easy to get along with. Is that something that you developed on purpose? Is that something that is, purposeful? Or is that just how you came out of grade school? Everybody's always loved you.
Well, thank you. I have my moments like everybody else, right? But it takes me a long, long time. You know, I get mad maybe once a year. I mean, it builds up. But you don't want to see me when I'm mad, when it builds up for 365 days. But I learned a long time ago, especially in relationships, guys. And we all, everybody knows in relationships, once you get past not worrying about the small little things in life that irritate you or irritate them or they gave me another no and they did this and that. And what am I going to do? Once you filter all that out, understand that life is way too short to be worrying about the small, you know, that we call it small shit. But, you know, once you get past that, I mean, my life, just like, it was like, talk about a weight coming off your shoulders. I mean, I'm just positivity, man. I'm just positivity. You know, I wrote before, you know, whenever I get a no, I turn that into an O-N, N-O-O-N. I turn it on to the next venture, I don't let the no's bother me. It's not in my vocabulary. It's not in my makeup. I have had, like I said, I have had more no's than probably most people will ever get in your product. But, you know, it doesn't matter because I know my capabilities. I always have, as you know, even as a young person, you know. I mean, hey, I've been down in my life two or three times, almost to bankruptcy, but I came back from zero every single time because I believed in my capabilities. I'm so positive about, you know, what goes on in my everyday life that I want to live it to the fullest. But and I'm so passionate. When I come up with something, it doesn't matter if I've built an antique auto and I've won the concourse and I've done that many times and I've done, you know, and I build a product. I take it to the nth degree, guys. I just get so passionate about it, and you can never lose that, you know. And I think that's what drives me and just keeps me going. And I don't have that sense of negativity, you know. I'm kind of like Clint Eastwood, you know. He says, "Don't let the old man in," you know. So,
I love it. That's a great question, great answer, brother. How do you want to handle this? How does everybody want to handle it? It's 5:34 our time.
I think we need to close up shop, you guys. And I just, a couple of things. Once again, Mike is one of those rare individuals. I've known him for quite a few years now. He's probably the most positive guy I've ever seen. He's just one of those guys. And I always like getting a call from Mike. I was on a call with him, a company he was pitching to. He let me sit in and watch him pitch. And I asked him why. He goes, what the hell? Come with me. And he just kind of brings you all together. Mike, thank you for that. That was wonderful.
It was so fun because we both learned. We learned a lot of things out of that little meeting.
He just invited me to come along. I said, I'll come along. I didn't know what to expect, but it was amazing. You guys, here's the thing that I realized. Find people that care about you. Find your network of people that are going through the same thing you are that relates to you. Keep educating yourself, right? Connect with like-minded individuals. The people know the difference between takers and givers. Know the difference. There's a big difference out there. And please keep learning. Don't stop. Get in the fight. Educate yourself. Do all the things. And just because maybe something doesn't work, it doesn't stop you. You learn from it. And you just keep on, like Mike said, he takes the no, turns them onto moving on. I love it. And I just, it's just remarkable. And I cannot thank you enough, Mike, for sharing your story. You've always been very transparent from day one. Thank you. But I also want to thank everybody who's listening. I see Celeste from South Africa. Celeste, thank you. Bev, you're always there supporting Michelle. I see you too. Eric, I see Tom there. You guys, Eric, you know what's really amazing?
Tom's there.
I see a lot of familiar faces. Keep connecting, right? Let's keep working together. Make sure we're all connected on LinkedIn, right? We're going to build a huge network there to make it easy for you. And I cannot thank enough my Andrew Krause for putting up with me for over 25 years. I've got to thank him. I don't thank him enough for that. Until next time, Andrew, anything else?
Oh, well, do my sign off. Take care, everybody, and keep inventing. See you guys.
Good night, Bye. Everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Benjamin. Thank you.